From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, clairvoyance. Special shout out tonight to avid Coast to Coast listener Jeff in Ferguson, Missouri, on the mend from COVID. Get better, Jeffrey. Get better. Here's what's happening. Any level of drinking, they say, can lead to loss of healthy life, according to the World Health Federation. It is sought to dispel the idea that a daily glass of wine may be good for you. They say no. In a new policy briefing, the organization said it wanted to challenge the widespread notion that drinking moderate amounts of alcohol can decrease risk of heart disease, and they called for urgent action to tackle the global rise in deaths caused by drinking. Why do they keep changing their mind? As the Omicron variant of the coronavirus continues to spread, officials in several states across the country have reported the surge is showing signs of slowing. In New York, COVID-19 infection data showed that the seven-day average of new hospital admissions down almost 19% from the previous week, the seven-day average of new cases down 436% from the prior 7 days, and the seven-day average of cases per 100,000 people declining in all regions. That's good news. The stories of bad customer behavior began trickling out of the summer of 2020 when businesses that had closed in the early part of the coronavirus pandemic began to reopen to a new angry mood in the United States. A restaurant, for example, struggling with staff and food shortages in Massachusetts, a group of diners grew so furious at the long wait for food that they demanded it be boxed up, and then what it was, they dumped the entire order uneaten into the garbage. In planes, well, we know what flight attendants are going through. They're caught between customers angry about COVID-related rules and their responsibility to enforce those rules. Airplanes are among the few places these days where people are locked in an enclosed space for hours with others who might not agree with them politically, and the flight attendants reported that they felt something new and frightening in the air. Sandra Champlain, of course, who hosts our Shades of the Afterlife podcast, is with us. Sandra, there's no question that COVID has caused a lot of people to just lose it. What are you sensing?
Absolutely. Anger, George, is such an awful thing, but it can be triggered from different things, being disrespected or treated unfairly, or if you feel threatened or attacked, or being interrupted when you're trying to accomplish something. High levels of stress or anxiety can cause anger, you know, so can lack of sleep. And grief, we're all experiencing a lot of grief. Anger is one of the five stages of grieving. And for the last couple of years, you're right, we've all been experiencing anger and frustration to a certain level, but some people have unfortunately let their anger get out of control. For any of us who are dealing with an angry person, what's important is not to add fuel to the fire. Fighting with an angry person builds more anger. If you can imagine someone throwing a punch your way, you need to step aside and the punch won't hit you. Same thing holds true with anger. Don't fight back, but do your best to diffuse the situation by letting the angry person know that you're listening to them, that you've heard them, and that you understand why they feel upset. You cannot control their emotions, but you can control yours. And if you are the angry person or find yourself angry from time to time, first, we need to understand that anger is a normal emotion, especially in these times of high stress. But taking it out on another person is just not acceptable. We can short-circuit anger in our brains. If you're feeling upset or anger is coming on to you, take some deep breaths and give your mind a task of thinking of something positive, such as the day your first child was born, or you can picture yourself on your favorite vacation spot, and soon you'll be able to calm down. You can identify why the anger took place. You can certainly forgive yourself for feeling it, and you can ask for forgiveness from anyone that you might have lashed out at. And last, George, we can talk about it. Yes, it's always good to see a therapist, but you can start by talking with a good friend or writing your feelings down in a journal. When we can get them out of our head, there's a stronger chance you won't act on them in the future.
Good advice, Sandra. Thank you so much. Violent crimes in major cities way up since COVID-19, by the way, too. Coming more than full circle in its disruption of retailing stores, listen to this. Amazon is wading into the world of brick-and-mortar clothing stores with a 30,000-square-foot shop in an upscale mall in suburban Los Angeles. The Amazon Style store promises to leverage e-commerce giant's ability and depth of data to give consumers a seamless and elevated shopping experience. The Seattle-based company said shoppers will use codes to see various sizes, colors, and product ratings, and they'll be able to send the clothes to the fitting room or checkout counter with a touch of a button. Customers will be able to check out using Amazon's palm recognition technology. Wow. Elon Musk's Starlink satellites are hindering scientists trying to detect near-Earth asteroids, according to a new study. At the moment, there are about 1,800 star-like satellites orbiting Earth. That's roughly around 550 kilometers away, providing internet to 24 different countries. Elon Musk, the world's richest man to date, has been sending an increasing amount of satellites into orbit since 2019. Kevin Randall, of course, retired Army Lieutenant Colonel, gives us our weekly UFO reports. Hey, Kev, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, and you, George?
All good. What do you got for us this week?
Well, I was going to say, you're looking particularly chipper tonight.
Thank you.
I found the following sighting reports made in the last few weeks that I thought might be interesting.
All righty.
On December 19th, 2021, from Clarksville, Indiana, came an accidental photograph of a UFO. According to the witness, he was chatting with a neighbor about the sunset when the neighbor decided to take a picture of still another neighbor's Christmas decorations. As the neighbor took the picture, the witness saw a very bright star above and to the right of the moon. The witness said, "That must be Venus." And I'll note here that at the time, Venus, Jupiter, and Saturn were all visible to the right of the moon. Saturn was very dim, but the other two were very bright. After the neighbor had taken the picture, the witness thought it was beautiful and asked for it to be sent to him. When he examined the picture, he noticed the bright star looked odd, so he zoomed in on it. Now he could see a lighted disk encircled with a gray rim. The neighbor reported seeing the same thing when he enlarged the photograph on his own phone. In December 19th in 2021, there was an event from Phoenix, Arizona, where an animal alerted the witness to something strange nearby. He said that he was walking the dog when the dog barked, and he sighted a long, slender object about 100 yards away. The shape was that of a narrow rectangle. It flew over the witness. It had lights along the body, but there were in a random pattern. There were two lights on the leading edge, and the lights were all white. It was in sight for 3 to 4 minutes, but there was no pictures taken because the witness didn't have his phone or a camera with him. This is the sort of sighting I like because it was something more than just a light in the sky or an object overhead. There was an animal reaction which suggests some sort of electromagnetic field associated with the craft. On December 18th, of last year, the witness in Liberty, Missouri, said that he saw what appeared to be an aircraft, but something didn't look right about it. He continued on his way and then noticed the same light pattern now directly in front of him. He thought the UFO was only 40 to 50 feet above the ground. He said the object was triangular-shaped, almost black in color, and made no noise. There were red and green lights at the points. The UFO stopped above a tree line just off the highway. At that point, the red and green lights went out, and he saw white lights that seemed to illuminate the craft. He kept driving, watching the object in his rearview mirror. After he crested a hill, he lost sight of it. He did mention several cars coming in the opposite direction, and he was sure that those drivers must have seen the object, but there were no additional reports. I mentioned the triangular objects are becoming so common that I wonder if it isn't something terrestrial. That idea is reinforced by the use of the red and green lights, which suggest navigation lights on an airplane. Of course, the craft stopped and hovered over the trees, and that suggests an advanced technology. And that's what I have for you tonight, George.
All right, my friend. We'll talk to you next week. Kevin Randall. His website is his blog, kevinrandall.blogspot.com. Up next, an old friend of ours, Robert Zubrin, back with us. His book, The Case for Space. We're going to talk about all things space next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Robert Zubrin back with us. Robert is the president of Pioneer Astronautics and the Mars Society, as well as a senior fellow with the Center for Security Policy. He has studied and researched the fields of aerospace and energy. He's got a Ph.D. in nuclear engineering. His latest book is called The Case for Space, How the Revolution in Spaceflight Opens Up a Future of Limitless Possibility. Robert, welcome back, my friend. How have you been?
I'm fine. Thanks for inviting me.
How many years has it been for us now? I would guess almost 20, at least.
Since we first spoke?
Yep.
I think that's about right.
My gosh, that's fantastic. And we haven't terraformed Mars yet.
No, but maybe 20 more years, who knows?
Maybe so. Did you hear that story I had about Elon Musk's Starlink? He's got 1,800 satellites up there. Now they're concerned that it's interfering with our ability to spot asteroids.
Well, okay, couple things about that. That is about as many as all other functioning satellites of the whole rest of the world put together.
Right.
Okay. But it's only a small fraction of the total amount of stuff that's in orbit, because there's a lot of non-functioning satellites that have been launched since the beginning of the space age. So it's somewhat overdrawn that Musk's constellation is changing everything in this way. It's an enormous achievement that one company now has, and basically within the past 2 years or so, launched as many functioning satellites as the whole rest of the world put together. But in terms of increasing the amount of orbital debris, it's probably increased it by about 15% or something like that. So it has not remarkably changed that picture. And so basically, yes, there certainly are astronomical plates that will be impaired by a SpaceX satellite, but they can also be impaired by many other satellites, both functioning and non-functioning, that are been there already.
Lots to talk with you about tonight, Robert. We'll take calls next hour with you, too. NASA has a program, a moon program called Artemis. Can you explain what the program is and give us an update on what's happening with it?
Yeah. Okay. The Trump administration decided that it was ridiculous to have a manned spaceflight program without any objective. And I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said that, well, the objective should be to return to the moon. And I am not that high on that. And they also chose a strategy to do it, to first build a Lunar orbiting space station. And that, I think, was just crazy, okay, because you don't need a lunar orbiting space station to go to the moon. And if you're forced to use a lunar orbiting space station to go to the moon, it actually makes the mission harder. But nevertheless, so I'll give them 1 out of 3, which, you know, batting 333 is...
Not bad in baseball.
Not bad in baseball, okay. But in any case, it beats batting 0. They launched this program, but in this sort of awkward kind of way. They made a dramatic announcement that they were going to get Americans back to the moon by 2024. But once again, they were not proceeding as if that's what they were trying to do. Because, I mean, John F. Kennedy in 1961 said, we want to be to the moon by the end of this decade. And if someone had said, well, you need to put a lunar orbiting space station there, he would have said, why? Why do I need that? I don't want to do things I don't need to do if I'm going to actually make it to the moon within 9 years. And they did not take this approach. So they let out a bunch of contracts for creating a lunar orbiting space station, which they call the Gateway. I call it the toll booth. And that program is moving ahead at a medium pace. They expect to launch that around 2024. Now,
with astronauts?
Well, not launch it with astronauts, but it would be visited by astronauts.
Okay.
Now, The interesting thing about this gateway thing, it was actually conceived of before the Trump Moon Initiative. It was dreamed up by the Obama administration, by the previous administrator, Charles Bolden, who viewed it not as a way to go to the moon, but as an alternative to going to the moon. He, in fact, was against returning to the moon. He said, we will never return to the moon. And he wanted to put a space station in orbit around the moon in order to have a place for astronauts to go to in this Orion capsule, which is kind of like an enlarged Apollo capsule, you know, sort of pyramid-shaped capsule, conical shape, I guess is a better term. But bigger than the Apollo capsule, and they could travel to it and visit it and look out the window at the moon. And this was kind of silly, but the program had achieved a certain amount of momentum, and so the Trump people said, well, this is part of our moon program. Anyway, so they'll launch the pieces of that around 2024. Now, they are building a rocket to launch it, which is called the SLS, Space Launch System. And the Space Launch System, if you want to know...
And we once had the Saturn V to launch, right?
Yes, and the Space Launch System actually has about the same takeoff thrust as a Saturn V, but it only has around 70% the lift capability because its upper stage is... not designed correctly. It's too weak. In other words, they have a very strong first stage comparable to a Saturn V, but the upper stage is nowhere near as good. And so, and it's really stupid because most of the cost of the rocket is the lower stage. It's much bigger than the upper stage.
Sure.
And so it's like, paying for the meal, and then when the waiter brings the appetizer, you say, that's enough, just give me the bill, and leaving the restaurant without eating the entree. I mean, that's kind of like what this thing is like. In other words, you're paying full cost for only part the benefit.
Pieces of-
and you could upgrade the upper stage of the SLS and get a Saturn V equivalent vehicle, but they're just, I don't know what's going on with that. Anyway, but with the SLS as it is, you could launch the pieces of the gateway to lunar orbit, and you could launch an Orion capsule with crew in it to the gateway to visit it. And right now, they're looking like they're going to be doing stuff like that in the 2026 timeframe. Now, meantime...
And that's not too far away, Robert.
Well, it's not, but it's not doing that much. I mean, you're not actually landing on the moon.
Right.
Now... they did realize that if you want to land on the moon, you have to have a system capable of landing on the moon. So 2 years ago, they put out a request for proposals, and they awarded some preliminary contracts to three companies. One was SpaceX. Another was an alliance of Lockheed Martin, Blue Origin, and Northrop Grumman, which was called the National Team. And another was to a company called Dynetics, a relatively small company leading sort of a team of 20 other small companies, a kind of a rebel alliance, as it were. Everybody thought, and then last year they had a down select to choose which one of these would actually build the lunar lander. And everybody thought it was going to go to the National Team because it was Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman and so forth. But in fact, they awarded to SpaceX. That was quite a surprise to the aerospace community. And it was an interesting decision because the National Team bid a system that looked exactly like what NASA was illustrating their moon mission plan was going to be, okay, with lots of little pieces being sent to the gateway, being assembled there, and then the three-stage expendable lander going from there to the moon and back up. But instead they awarded to SpaceX, which just had a radically different system, which is this thing called the Starship. Now, it's not a Starship like the Enterprise. The Starship is just a name. But what it is a two-stage heavy lift vehicle. It has about the same payload capability to orbit as a Saturn V, so about half again as much as SLS, but only cost 1% as much.
Jeez.
Because it's reusable. SLS is expendable, as of course was the Saturn.
It's amazing how that lands on the landing pad, isn't it?
Right, exactly. Now, SpaceX got experience with this, with its medium lift launch vehicles called the Falcons, which they've now launched over 100 of them, and the first stage of that is reusable. It comes back and it lands. The upper stage is expendable, but once again, the first stage of the Falcon has 9 of its 10 engines. So
hold on for a second, Robert. We're at a break. Let's come back and pick it up right there. Robert Zubin with us as we talk about all things space. Welcome back. George Norrie with you. Robert Zubin with us. Robert, why does it take a private company like SpaceX to develop the Starship when NASA was around for years, spent trillions of dollars? Why couldn't they have done this?
Well, a couple of things. Part of the problems in NASA, part is in the political class.
Sure.
The political class is constantly changing its mind about things. And so you have this constant thing where NASA's budget for a project gets approved for a year or two, and then it's canceled. So there was an attempt by NASA to move towards a reusable launch vehicle in the late 90s, but that program was aborted. But that said, so there's that, but also just the courage. And imagination. In other words, if you have a private company that's led by an individual who,
he's got drive and ambition.
He's got ambition, and if people say it can't be done and he believes it can, it's like the Wright brothers, right? Who believed that the Wright brothers would succeed? These bicycle mechanics say they're going to fly in the sky, okay? But they had the passion, and they had, it wasn't an irrational belief. They ran the numbers, they figured it out, and they said, we're going to do this. And Musk has done the same thing. Now, of course, to make something like Starship, you have to have a bit more money than a bicycle mechanic. So it took a while before somebody came along who both had the vision and had the resources. But now we're seeing that.
So do you think we're going to actually get back to the moon with astronauts?
Oh yeah, we're going to get back to the moon with astronauts. I think SpaceX is going to be a major factor in that. Now you should know, they held this competition. SpaceX won it. Their bid for a much more capable system than was bid by the national team, but it was half the price. It was $2.9 billion instead of $5.8 billion, literally half the price. And because here's the thing, it probably will cost Musk more than that to develop the Starship, but he was going to spend that money anyway.
That's
so
right.
If he can get NASA to pay half, he's willing to pay the other half, more than happy to, because he would develop it without NASA's money. And so he is putting his money behind the vision, and he's stepping up with a system that, if it is successful, will not only enable moon missions, it will enable Mars missions, and not just missions, but Mars settlement, because that, in fact, is Musk's vision. It's not just exploration, it's making humanity multiplanetary, and that is the purpose of Starship. You could accomplish human Mars missions with a system like the SLS. That is, if your goal was exploration and you're willing to spend a couple of billion dollars per mission, which in the scheme of government spending is not that much, you could do a human Mars mission that way. And in fact, in my Mars direct mission, was pretty much designed using a launch vehicle very much like SLS, but with a proper upper stage. But with the Musk system, fully reusable, we can reduce the cost of a human Mars mission from a couple of billion dollars to a couple of million dollars. And and that means that if you're sending 100 people to Mars, okay, 100 people times $100,000 each is $10 million. That'd be enough to buy a used Starship because, look, if there's reusable launch vehicles, that means there's used launch vehicles, right?
That's right.
Just like there's used cars. And if you can't afford a new car, you can probably afford a used car.
Of course, look what's happening to the price of used cars these days. They're going through the roof.
Okay, well, now, but still, if you're willing to, if you don't have that much money, you can still find a used car that'll get you around, okay? Might not be the nicest car, but it'll get you around. But the point is, Musk down there in Boca Chica, he's not building a ship. He's building a shipyard. They're turning out Starship prototypes at a rate of one a month. And they are ready to launch the first one to orbit. They've been held up for months by the EPA is conducting this endless review. And this thing is not, in fact, being halted by technical feasibility anymore. It's just being halted by slow-moving government bureaucracy. And, frankly, if people listening to this show want to do something to help make humanity multiplanetary, they should call up their congressman's office and tell them to get the EPA out of the way and let them launch the Starship.
What's going on with the Space Force? I mean, you and I talked about it a couple of years ago. Has anything changed? Have they gotten any closer?
Well, there is a Space Force now.
It's pretty quiet.
Well, it's not meant to be something that is in the news every day, okay?
It's one of those Space Forces.
A lot of what the Space Force does is secret because it has to do with reconnaissance satellites and things like that, which are vital to military preparedness. And I should say, by the way, that in addition to Starship being something that will make humanity multiplanetary, it will do a great deal for American national defense. At this point, space assets are vital. If there was a large-scale conventional war, which is becoming quite possible if you follow the news, our space assets are our key assets. They allow us to see everything that's going on. They allow us to communicate. They allow us to have GPS-guided munitions, which are literally 100 times more accurate than ones that are not guided. Okay, and that means that one tank or one artillery piece or one missile or one bomb does the work of 100 because it's the ones that hit that count. And if there was a major war, okay, against a capable adversary, they'd be taking out our satellites because they know that that's what they do. And
that would be one of the first things to go, I would guess.
Right, but that means you've got to replace them, okay? In a real war, you have to be able to replace your assets. In World War II, the United States built over 20,000 B-17s, okay? And we didn't go to war with 100 B-17s and say, well, there's our fleet of B-17s. We had factories turning these things out. And the
war effort changed this planet, didn't it?
Well, yeah. But anyway, my point is this, is that holding up Starship is endangering America's national defense. That's my point.
Well, you're probably right there.
Yeah.
I think you're right there. How many members do they expect to have in the Space Force?
Actually, I don't know that number. My guess it's something on the order of 30,000 or so. It's not the largest force. The Air Force is much bigger. The Air Force is at least five times the size.
I would guess it's smart to have a Space Force.
Well, it is, you see, because, look, people should understand something, because people say, oh, my God, we're having a Space Force, we're militarizing space. Space has been militarized since 1944, okay? The issue is, because German V-2s went through space to
right.
get to their targets. But America has had military space forces since 1958, and it's mostly been part of the other services, the Navy, the Army, and most especially the Air Force. But the problem is that it's viewed as a frill. It's like, you know, because in those services, the way you get ahead is by commanding troops in combat or commanding a ship in combat. That's how you rise in prestige. That's how you become a general. In other words, there is a heroic ethos to those services, and rightly so. But the guys that run space operations, they sit behind desks. So they'll always be, if they're part of the Air Force, they'll always be considered second rate compared to the fighter pilots. And so they can't be taken seriously, even though, in fact, what they do is essential. So they need to have their own service.
Back in 2019, you wrote a great book called The Case for Space, How the Revolution is Spaceflight Opens Up a Future of Limitless Possibilities. If you were to update it today, what would you change?
Well, that's interesting. Well, not that much has changed since 2019. Well, a couple of things. I mean, the Starship has become much more real. They were talking about Starship. They were working on it. But now, in fact, we've seen, you know, the upper stage of the Starship has been taking off and landing from Boca Chica. And they had to try six times before they got it to succeed. And that's, by the way, another thing about SpaceX. They're willing to fail. Their first three attempts at reaching orbit all failed. But they kept going
until they
succeeded.
They got better each time they failed.
Yes. And then the Falcon 9. The first five attempts to land the Falcon 9 all failed, and then they succeeded. And the first five attempts to land Starship failed, and then they succeeded. And that's their thing. You know, they've built this shipyard. They're turning out Starship prototypes at a rate of one a month. They're prepared to launch them, crash them, figure out what went wrong, launch it again, fix it again, until it works. And, you know, that's why, you know, in the past 10 years or so, the SpaceX has, the past 12 years, they introduced the Falcon 1, then the expendable Falcon 9, then the reusable Falcon 9, then the reusable Falcon Heavy, then the Cargo Dragon, then the Crew Dragon, and now Starship. And the Starlink, 1,800 satellites. This is an amazing set of accomplishments.
That's huge.
And it's because they got a great team, and they're willing to dare. They're willing to fail. Okay? They're not, you know, you compare that SLS program. I was on the team that actually did the preliminary design for what is now called SLS in 1988.
That
and
long
it
ago.
It has yet to fly.
Unbelievable. What's going on with Jeff Bezos?
Well, I don't know. Bezos does not have the same level of passion and commitment that Musk does.
I mean, other than the publicity with the Shatner and stuff like that, they're not doing much.
But that was a suborbital flight.
Right.
And really what he needs to do is look at what Musk is doing and saying, that is our model. That is what we are going to do. We're working on this thing called the New Glenn. Let's stop analyzing it to death. Let's just start turning them out, launching them. I'm willing to crash the first four, okay? Because I know that, I mean, look, the United States, NASA itself, its first several launches all failed. You know, if you go back to the late 50s.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Okay, they just
and look at all the astronauts we lost in tragedies.
Yeah, well, we didn't have people on any of those rockets, but these, you could look at these early launches of Atlases and such, and so many failures. But that was the right thing to do. Okay, that was necessary. If they had sit there and say, "We're not going to launch till we know it's going to work," they never would have launched.
That's true. That's true. You know what's interesting? In my day, when we were going to the moon, I was a kid, everybody knew the names of all the astronauts. Nobody hardly knows any of them anymore. What's happened?
Well, I think it's because the astronauts are not being asked to do missions of significance.
I mean, remember the original seven Mercury? I think I still remember all their names.
Yeah, I remember them too. And and that is because they were space pioneers. They were originals. You know, of course, the first task was just getting America into space, because we had to, you know, be able to do what the Russians could do. We, you know, as John Kennedy said, you know, a new ocean has opened and free men must sail it. And they were the ones willing to do it on rockets that at that time were really risky things to fly on. And then, of course, the astronauts who went to the moon. We can remember them.
Yeah, and Buzz Aldrin's still alive, still kicking.
That's right, very much so. Now,
amazing.
But the astronauts now, I don't think they're lesser people. They want to be, they want to be have the chance to put their daring and skill at risk,
sure,
to be the first people to go to Mars. But the space agency is just taking them and sending them up to the space station and down again and up again and down again and up again and down again. So these people are not being allowed to do what their intelligence and courage and skill would let them do.
Robert, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and chat more with you. I want to ask you what countries are in the race right now and coming along. Give us your thoughts on that. And, of course, we'll take calls with you next hour here on Coast to Coast AM with Robert Zubrin, The Case for Space. We will be right back.